Justice. You heard me right. Rogue Justice. Yeah, I'm talking to you, Justice Clarence Thomas. Hey, welcome, Truth Seekers. Welcome, America. It is I, once again, Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen, investigative journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, and tonight, actually, even a fictional character. I'll explain in a minute. Anyway, the blogger from bradblog.com, once again, broadcasting from the left coast here, coast to coast and around the globe, from beautiful downtown Burbank to the rest of the world. It's a beautiful, beautiful summer night, finally warmed up out here in Los Angeles. Glad you could join us for the Mike Malloy Show. Mike is, of course, on away. Mike is away on summer break for another day or two. He'll be back with you on Wednesday. Until then, you got me. I hope that's okay. I'm delighted to be here with you. And, oh boy, do we have plenty to talk about as usual. It used to be, you know, in the summer, things got slower. There wasn't much to talk about. All of that sort of changed. I think it was like 2005 when Cindy Sheehan went down to Crawford, Texas in August. And all of a sudden, that slow month of August became not so slow after all. And, well, ain't nothing slow anymore. Too much going on. I'll try to cover the important parts of it for you today. Our phone number, by the way, if you want to get into the program today, tonight, wherever you may be, is 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. I'm not necessarily taking calls right away, but we will at some point in this program. As a matter of fact, the last hour I'm going to try, as I have been trying to do, trying to keep the entire hour open to you, to open calls, to your thoughts, to your opinions, because these are, as I like to say, your public airwaves. Use them before you lose them more than you already have, because guess what? If you didn't notice, you have lost them. Just about all of them. And so you've got this oasis, an oasis of non-wingnut talk right here on the Mike Malloy Show. And glad you found us for it. You can also tweet me as you like at the Brad Blog, where you can follow me and or tweet me and or scream out whatever you like. As this right-wing Twitterer did by the name of Sheila Brooks. I was just reviewing her conversation that she was having with a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist by the name of Danny Concannon concerning Justice Clarence Thomas. And, you know, I wasn't sure what I was going to start with tonight. Well, thanks, Sheila Brooks. You helped me determine what I'm going to start with. I'm going to start with Clarence Thomas. But before I do, a couple of teasers for what's coming up in the rest of the program tonight. Tommy Christopher from Mediaite is going to be joining us in a little bit to discuss, well, a couple of points. One, a story that he got hoaxed on. Some sources of his concerning this Wienergate nonsense, a story that he did concerning two supposedly high school girls, turned out to be completely fake. He was hoaxed. According to the New York Times, his sources, these two high school girls and one of their mothers, were completely made up. And they played an important role, I'm sorry to say, in this ridiculous, this absurd story of Anthony Weiner. And now over the weekend, we found out that these sources were completely fake. So in the process of that story, Tommy Christopher went out of his way to defend the con man, liar, right-wing scam artist Andrew Breitbart. And so I'm going to talk to Tommy about that, see if he still stands by his vigorous, full-throated defense of the liar Andrew Breitbart. So that'll be fun. We're also going to talk a little bit later with Richard Averitt, author of a new book called Imagine Politique, in which yours truly, that's right, I, Brad Friedman, am apparently a character. I play a fictional character. Well, there's a fictional character by the name of Brad Friedman who actually shows up and talks to the Progressive Independent Party's president-elect. Yeah, now you're getting why it's called Imagine Politique. I show up, or my character shows up to talk to this president-elect to inform him, to give him some troubling news concerning some election fraud that may have happened in the state of Georgia on touchscreen voting machines. A very interesting story, a very interesting book. We will get to that later as we talk to the author, Richard Averitt. Okay, what other business do I have? Oh, the bradblog.com chat room is now open for business. And the lovely Desi Doyen is in there holding down the fort. Jeannie Dean is in there. Stop on by bradblog.com. Click through the first item there. You will find the chat room. It's always lively. And have fun there. I'll do my best to keep my eyes on it, as I usually do and usually fail to do. But you can come on by there and heckle me all you like. All right, speaking of heckling, so yeah, I was just a few minutes before air, wasn't sure, got so many things I'd like to talk about, wasn't sure which direction I was going to go, but then I saw this conversation between this right-winger, Sheila Brooks, talking to a fellow by the name of Danny Concannon, he's described as a Pulitzer Prize winner, and he had been looking at some of the work, some of the reports that I had done on Clarence Thomas and the laws that it appears that Thomas has broken, and tweeted about it. And, of course, this Sheila Brooks responded, he hasn't done anything. There's absolutely nothing that Clarence Thomas has done. He has not broken any laws whatsoever. Don't listen to that moron from Brad's G-blog. He's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's talking about just because he has, you know, the proof of the actual documents and things there. Never mind that. Brad Blog is a moron. I don't believe him. Okay, well, thanks, Sheila. Now I know what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about the crimes of Justice Clarence Thomas, because apparently Sheila Brooks hasn't heard about it yet. I'm here to help, Sheila. All right, over the weekend, we had more news. Before I get to the crimes of Clarence Thomas, more news about the ethical failures, the growing ethical failures, the ethical bankruptcy of Justice Clarence Thomas. Over the weekend, the New York Times' Mike McIntyre wrote another story about the questionable relationship that Clarence Thomas has with his benefactors, folks who give him hundreds of thousands of dollars that sometimes he seems to disclose, other times he does not. This fellow by the name of, what's his name, Algernon Varn. No, he's not. He's the one who owned the cannery. Okay, there's this cannery where in Savannah, Georgia, where Clarence Thomas's mother worked some years ago, and it's since shut down back in 85 or 95, I think. It shut down. It's sort of crumbling. And Clarence Thomas has an interest in building it back up as a museum, as an example of where he came from. And he was able to hook up the owners of the property with a benefactor of his, a fellow by the name of, here we go, Harlan Crowe, a Dallas real estate magnate and a major contributor to conservative causes. I'd call them right-wing causes. Mr. Crowe stepped in to finance the multi-million dollar purchase after he was called on by Justice Thomas to do so, and the restoration of the cannery, featuring a museum about the culture and history of the Pinpoint Cannery that has become a pet project of Justice Thomas's. The project throws a spotlight on an unusual and ethically sensitive friendship that appears to be markedly different from those of other justices on the nation's highest court. Story goes on to talk about all of the gifts that this Harlan Crowe has given to Justice Thomas, a Frederick Douglass Bible that is said to be worth something like $15,000, a bust of Abraham Lincoln said to be worth $12,000. He also reportedly gave $500,000 to Ginny Thomas, Justice Thomas's wife, to start her right-wing group, Liberty Central, back in 2009, right around the time that the United Citizens United decision was playing itself out, as Ginny Thomas set up her her right-wing think tank, what do we call it, Tea Party group, who made a whole lot of money based on Citizens United that allowed the corporate, what do I call this, a wave of corporate money to be poured into these right-wing groups that just happened to benefit the wife of Clarence Thomas. I'll go through some of that timeline here in a little bit, just exactly how that came about and the questions that have come out because of it concerning what appears to be something folks are calling judicial insider trading. I'll also go through the crimes. Yes, the crimes, Sheila Brooks, of Justice Clarence Thomas. We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll come back and talk about the financial disclosure reports wherein Justice Thomas appears to have forgotten to report some $700,000 that his wife received from right-wing groups who benefited from the decisions that Justice Clarence Thomas was making on the highest court of the land. He just forgot. Except that it's a crime. It's a crime to withhold that information. It's a crime to willfully falsify those forms, yet that appears to be what Clarence Thomas did. Much, much more straight ahead on tonight's Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman, in for Mike. Glad you could join us. Please stay tuned. The law put quotes around that. The law won. Justice Thomas is winning. He says he represents the law. Apparently he represents breaking the law. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy tonight. We'll be joined by Tommy Christopher in a little bit, so stick with us. But thanks to Sheila Brooks, the Twitterer over there, who says Clarence Thomas broke no laws. I felt it was only my duty to inform the American people, to inform the world of the laws that Thomas appears to have broken going back 20 years each and every time he filed his financial disclosure reports and signed it just above, half an inch, and we have the forms. You can go look them up. We got them at bradblog.com. He signed the forms just above a notice that said, "Note, any individual who knowingly and willfully falsifies or fails to file this report may be subject to civil and criminal sanctions." Let's see, U.S., what's the law there? 5 U.S.C. Section 104, which, requires imprisonment for not more than 1 year. Fines not to exceed $50,000 for each instance. And Clarence Thomas appears to have falsified these forms for some 20 years, each and every time he filed them, where it asks for his to fill in his spouse's non-investment income, he included none. Year after year after year, despite some $700,000 that his wife Ginny, $700,000 that his wife Ginny received from Heritage Foundation. He only went in and amended those forms once Common Cause began to call him out on it, and we are now calling him out on it as well over at protectourelections.org, which is a campaign created by a group, velvetrevolution.us, of which the Brad Blog is a co-founder. But check what he did, because here's the deal. Who was this here? Ian Millhiser wrote yesterday over at Think Progress, justices have been forced to resign for doing what Clarence Thomas has done. Yeah. They've been forced to resign for doing much less than what Clarence Thomas has done. Anyone remember Abe Fortas? F-O-R-T-A-S. Go look him up. Abe Fortas. He resigned back in the 60s for doing much less than Clarence Thomas has already been caught doing. He resigned for ethical problems, but I'm not even talking about, you know what, when it comes to ethics, you can't shame Clarence Thomas into resigning because of his ethics problems. You can't shame someone when they have no shame, when they are shameless. You can't call them out for their ethics issues when they have no ethics. They're not going to do anything about it. They're going to ignore it. And ignore it they can, because there is nobody who oversees the Supreme Court when it comes to ethics. They are on their own. They decide their own ethics. So what choices do we have? Well, you can call for Clarence Thomas's resignation, which if he had any shame, he already would have done long ago. As a matter of fact, he would have dropped out 20 years ago instead of fighting to be confirmed back when he had dalliances with women. Inappropriate dalliances with women, just like David Vitter, Senator David Vitter, caught going to prostitutes. Neither of them have to resign. Anthony Weiner broke no laws. He's got to resign. But Clarence Thomas, so $700,000 he withheld from his financial disclosure forms. He decided the Citizens United case back in 2000, even though 20 years ago, a young new group that had just sprung up by the name of Citizens United put $100,000 into outside ads to target the senators who were opposing Clarence Thomas. And yet 20 years later, when that same group, Citizens United, came before his court, did Clarence Thomas recuse himself? No, because he's shameless. Because he has no ethics. That's right, Citizens United, $100,000. So the case was argued in September 2009. His wife, Ginny, then launched her Liberty Central organization, managed to raise $550,000 in about a month at the end of 2009. Then, of course, Citizens United was decided in favor of Citizens United by Justice Thomas. Did Ginny know about that? Don't know, because in March of 2010, Liberty Central announced that they would accept donations from various sources, including corporations, as allowed under campaign finance rules recently loosened by who? The Supreme Court. Congratulations, Jenny. That's a whole lot of money you just made. We're going to be talking more about Clarence Thomas in this show. Count on it. We're going to speak with Tommy Christopher next. Change gears a little bit for the moment. You're listening to Brad on The Molloy Show. Welcome back to the Mike Molloy Show. Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen investigative blogger, journal, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow from bradblog.com. In for Mike Molloy tonight. He's on summer break. Glad you could join us. Over the break, someone in the chat room and my browser crashed, so I can't give proper credit, but someone said, Clarence Thomas will resign when Andrew Breitbart stops lying. Perfect segue. Thank you, whoever you were out there in the bradblog.com chat room. Perfect segue for where we're headed here. I'm going to be joined. Is there another business I have to do here? No. Okay, good. No, I'm good. I'm joined now by Mediaite's Tommy Christopher, a reporter who has been on the Wienergate scandal pretty much since it first broke. It's a story that I have not been covering at bradblog.com or much here on the show. Because, frankly, I believe it's nonsense. I think it's a stupid story, and it is so beside the point. It is such a distraction from what actually matters in this country, from what is actually bringing down this country, from all the things that matter, from all the things that are going on. I feel it's my responsibility as a member of the media to use my time and whatever bully pulpit I may have to report things that actually matter. On the other hand, everybody in the media feels different than me, apparently, because they've been all over this Andrew Weiner story for weeks. And one of those folks was Tommy Christopher, who actually filed a very interesting report a couple of weeks ago at Mediaite. And, well, before we get into the details, let me welcome, hey, Tommy, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hey, Brad. You realize you just said Andrew Weiner, right?
I did.
A little Freudian slip there, huh?
Okay.
Also, I wanted to congratulate you on that musical selection. That was really awesome and original. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, well, who needs you, Tom? You're ready to fight, aren't you? You came here to fight,
no,
didn't you?
No.
You did? That's all right.
Let's do it.
All right. Let's do this. Okay, so Tommy, and let me see, because there's some important points that I want to talk about. So what I'm going to try to do is very quickly pull together what your report was.
Can you send me like a photo ID?
I send you a photo ID. Why? So that I can not vote.
You say you're Brad Friedman.
Uh huh. Uh huh. Yeah, I know.
Sorry, is that two inside? Go ahead.
It's two inside for the moment. It won't be in a second, though. So hang on. You see, because I also deal with photo IDs in a completely different context, Tommy, as the right-wingers are keeping people from voting over this photo ID business. But anyway, okay, so your story, this will make sense in a minute, folks. Okay, so your story, you write this story. I'm going to try to summarize it here, and then I'll let you correct me where I got any points wrong. But you wrote a story concerning what were two high school girls on Twitter who said that they had contact with Anthony Weiner. One of them was trying to invite Anthony Weiner to be his prom, to be her prom date. The other one then, after this whole scandal broke, said that she had inappropriate conversations with Andrew. With Anthony Weiner. And you, instead of running with this story, you dug into the story to try to figure out what the hell was going on. You sourced it. You had them send you things to prove that they were who they said they were. They sent you driver's license, photo IDs, as you mentioned. The mother sent you a statement of one of the girls saying that, these right-wingers on Twitter who were out to get Anthony Weiner were now hassling her. Hassling the daughter, and they said, "Hey, please back off, everyone. My daughter did nothing inappropriate." And you got the information that that daughter, that 16-year-old, had a 17-year-old friend who was actually lying and was making everything up, and admitted that in fact Andrew Weiner didn't do anything. Anthony Weiner didn't do anything important or inappropriate with her. And you told this story, and it was a very interesting story. And now it turns out, and there was another part of that article that I'm going to get to in a moment concerning Andrew Breitbart. But
let me jump in and correct you for one second.
Okay, yes.
Not that it matters now, but both of the girls were 16, and only the one girl was alleged to have had contact with Weiner.
Okay.
The other girl, the friend, who we refer to as Veronica in the story, was contacted by these conservatives who had been tracking Weiner. And she told them that both she and her friend had inappropriate contact with Weiner, and offered to get, DMs or whatever. And
DMs, direct and messages from Anthony Weiner and so forth.
Right.
Twitter.
And then meanwhile, the story was that she was telling her friend, Betty, that these people had contacted her on behalf of Breitbart in order to make up a story about Weiner, that he was trying to draft him as child prostitute.
Okay.
So that's how I was approached by Betty, was with the story that that Breitbart was trying to get these girls to lie and say that they were underage prostitutes.
All right.
So that's how it jumped off.
All right. Now, and you called them in the story to protect what you thought was their identities. You called them Betty and Veronica for the purposes of the story over at Mediaite. And now we learn over the weekend a story comes out in the New York Times saying that this entire thing, Betty and Veronica and I guess Betty's mother, are all fake. They're all fake personas. They never existed. There's apparently one person is believed to be all three of these people, correct?
Well, we don't know that, but what we know is that they are not the same people that were on the identification they sent me. So we don't know who they are, how many they were, what their ages are.
Right.
We are working on some leads, but
Okay.
You know, I don't believe in putting that stuff out prematurely.
I gotcha. Okay, so you went, so the IDs that they sent you were forged. You did a certain amount of verification, but not apparently not enough to notice that this was a big scam and that they were scamming you. Correct?
Well, whatever. Yeah, I mean, it turns out they weren't who they said they were. I would say that, given the circumstances, I did what was more than reasonable, what was more than reasonably expected. But, you know, it didn't turn out.
No, no, I agree, and I'm yeah. actually not criticizing you there because I think you did. I think you took some, you know, fairly thorough measures to try to make sure that they were who they said they were, and they took extraordinary measures to try to hoax you, to scam you with false information, yeah. Doctored up driver's licenses, and all sorts of things. So you got scammed, you got hoaxed, but I think it was understandable, and I think you were responsible in your attempts to verify who you thought were your sources. But you
and,
know,
well, there's two things yeah. that I think are getting lost in this story, which is that, you know, I also continued, you know, after the story was published, you know, concerns were brought to me about these sources, and so I continued to investigate,
mm-hmm.
and it was through my cooperation that the New York Times was able to break that story. So we,
mm-hmm.
we didn't publish it. It's not like we were working together, so we didn't publish a story together, but, you know, we were working in conjunction with each other. And the other thing is that their story didn't rely simply on these statements or on their fake identity, but on a lot of documentation that turns out to be true. So what they did was they fooled me into printing what was essentially a true story.
How is it essentially a true story?
Well, because, I mean, I think you want to explain the story more, but the two main points of the story that I wrote were, and really the one main point was that, you know, Andrew Breitbart was being falsely accused of creating a hoax, of manufacturing this.
Okay.
And so that was the one point of the story, the main point. And then the other point was that Representative Wiener had not had inappropriate contact with this particular girl, which also turned out to be true.
It was
1 DM. That was it.
Right. Okay. So there was no inappropriate contact with these two fictional girls, but nobody knew that at the time. So there was no inappropriate contact with these two 16-year-old girls. There was a 17-year-old girl in Delaware, and the parents have said there was no inappropriate contact there. The police.
Did you just say that? I'm sorry, did you say there was no inappropriate contact there? Because I would disagree with that.
Well, my understanding is that the parents have said there was no inappropriate contact with the 17-year-old girl in Delaware.
Well, we can revisit that, but yeah, I disagree.
You disagree?
I'm not sure that it's the parents. I know that Jennifer Preston quoted a family member
uh-huh.
as saying that they were innocent, but I don't know that this family member was aware of the full context. You know, the last tweet that he sent her was this stuff about cape and tights and that they was large and in charge.
Yes.
And
that sounded very much like the inappropriate, I don't know if it's inappropriate, but the sexting that he did with that woman who was a 40-year-old blackjack dealer or something, where he talked about the cape and tights and all of that, right?
Yeah, and that just, I mean, to me that was it was the same overture he made with his sexting buddy. And it was clear to me that that was an invitation for her to then say something in response. You know what I mean? There were little seeds in there, like, oh, you're large.
You know what? Okay. Yeah, you know what?
I'm a parent. I don't know, Brad. If it was my daughter
uh-huh.
and some guy sent her that message and I knew about this other girl, I'd be over at his house stomping his nuts right about now.
Okay. So. Well, the problem is that this girl didn't know about the other girl at the time,
right,
as far as we know, and I don't think it's responsible to imply anything that we don't know at this time. And this is where, and this is why I wanted to have you on specifically, because in your article about Betty and Veronica, where Betty and Veronica turned out to be fake personas, the tactic you took, you didn't write a story about Betty and Veronica. Your story was actually, even though there was a lot of important and good reporting in there that ended up being, you know, you were fooled. Okay, that happens. But your headline was, Andrew Breitbart did not run Wienergate evidence, which turned out to be fake. unfair accusations against Andrew Breitbart over Wienergate scandal. When it comes to the publication of factual evidence, Breitbart has acted responsibly throughout, you wrote. Breitbart, as far as presentation of documentary evidence, has acted responsibly throughout, you repeated. Andrew treated the documentation presented to him with circumspection. Now, I talked to you about this privately because this wasn't a story that I was, you know, all that interested in covering, but I thought that Andrew Breitbart was using you. And when you made these comments that he has acted responsibly throughout and everything else, this was just days after he had appeared on CNN charging that Congressman Wiener has been having relationships with women. Actually, do you have this audio? Let me just play this audio, and then I'll get your impression on it, Tommy. Sure. So here was Andrew Breitbart on CNN.
And I don't know him that well. He's been monitoring relationships that Congressman Wiener has been having with women, young women who claim to have relationships with him. I'm not saying what type of relationships, but people that Rep. Wiener's follows, girls that are quite young, younger than the girl in question here, talk openly about Rep. Wiener, mm-hmm. who he follows these girls.
Okay, relationships with Congressman Wiener with young women, younger than the girl in question, and I think at that point the girl in question was the 21-year-old or something who started all of this. Girls that are quite young, younger than the girl in question here. You feel that he had acted responsibly in going on CNN and saying that, Tommy Christopher?
Well, not Brad and I have already discussed this privately, but so I feel silly repeating it, but. act like this is the first time you heard it.
Okay.
You know, in the article, I specifically said, look, I'm not defending every statement that he's made. I haven't heard all of them, and I have heard several that I have had problems with. I was referring specifically to the charge that he had manufactured evidence or that he had presented evidence that wasn't, you know, properly verified, all that.
But you had heard what he said on CNN when you wrote that, had you not?
I don't know if I'd heard that particular comment, but there have been a few that I, you know, had called him out for on Twitter. I thought when he said that these people, these Patriot USA gang, were monitoring him,
mm-hmm.
I thought I sent a tweet that said, yeah, he's monitoring them the way that Westboro Baptist monitors funerals. You know, these people were, you know, whatever you think of Anthony Wiener. They were harassing him and anybody who followed him and saying horrible things and you know, casting aspersions about his sexuality, about his wife's sexuality. It was disgusting, vile stuff. So whether these people turned out to be right about him having relationships with women online, I don't – they're like, hey, we're owed an apology. No, you're not. You're horrible people. You're internet trolls and, you know, good.
Right.
So you were – being nasty to a guy who ended up being a bad guy.
Tommy, hold the thought. I'm speaking with Tommy Christopher of Mediaite. Brad in for Mike Malloy. More with Tommy straight ahead. Stay with us.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom.
All right, we're back on the Mike Malloy Show, speaking with Tommy Christopher of Mediaite.com concerning his article, which turned out to be based on some sources called that he was calling Betty and Veronica in this Anthony Wiener business. They turned out to be fake. Tommy was fooled, though I believe he did a lot of due diligence to try to make sure that they weren't fake. So I don't hold that against him. However, I do hold against him the apologies that he made for Andrew Breitbart in this story, saying that Breitbart has acted responsibly, even though Breitbart had gone on CNN, made inferences about Anthony Wiener, quote, with girls that are quite young, younger than the girl in question here, with women, young women who claim to have relationships with him. I don't believe that was responsible at all, and I believe Tommy was not only fooled by Betty and Veronica, but fooled by Andrew Breitbart, who he had been at other times quite skeptical of. So, Tommy, Where am I getting this wrong? Do you still stand by the support that you gave to Andrew Breitbart, despite his years of being a liar, that you've called him out at various times for that? You still stand by what your support of Breitbart in this business?
Well, first of all, I want to say, again, I appreciate the thoughtful music cues.
You're welcome. Your boss, Kobe Hall, liked it over on Twitter. So stop complaining, Tommy. Go ahead.
Look, I stand by what I wrote. I think you're reading too much into what I wrote. I think the criticism of Breitbart, sometimes it tends to be not overblown, but I think it's misfocused. I think people focus on the wrong things. You know, they try and paint him as a racist. I don't think he's a racist.
Okay, I'm not painting him as a racist either. He is a race baiter, in my opinion, but I'm not saying he's a racist. What I am saying is that he has gone out and he has lied. He has put up information about Acorn that was a complete and utter lie, charging an entire four-decade-old organization as being involved in child prostitution, Tommy. This is not a guy, who anybody should listen to anything. He has, did something similar with Shirley Sherrod. He does not tell the truth, and why would you then go out of your way to make apologies for this guy whose behavior, I think, is appalling?
Well, here's what I would say. I feel that, when we make illegitimate criticisms, it weakens our legitimate criticisms. And the idea that Breitbart manufactured this obviously turned out not to be true. And, and so that was the reason I did it, because people were making this charge, and it wasn't just, people expect to hear anything and everything on like a Daily Coast diary, but there were people in the mainstream media who were repeating these ideas. And I feel like illegitimate criticism weakens legitimate criticism.
And feel it's illegitimate
And plus, I felt it was wrong. I mean, look, Brad, I have a strong sense of right and wrong. It's part of what guided me in this story, it's what made me go to war with Marcos Melitzis over this. And like him or not, I don't feel like, I feel like even a somebody you don't like deserves to be treated fairly. Breitbart was being treated unfairly.
Well,
he didn't manufacture this. Let me talk about that statement you talked about on CNN, because...
Actually, hang on, Tommy, hang on, because I'm coming up against the top of the clock, and I want to give you a fair shake on this. Are you able to hang on for a few minutes through the top of the hour, and I'll have you back and continue on this? Just a few more minutes with Tommy Christopher of Mediaite.com. You're listening to Brad Friedman of Bradblog.com on the Mike Malloy Show. A few more minutes here with Tommy Christopher on my good friend Andrew Breitbart. Oh, brother, after the top of the hour, get your disinfectant ready. Brad in from Malloy, stay with us.